and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are penetrating your ears thanks to oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it's been a week of close but no cigar for the Albion this week. Last Saturday, we nearly snatched a point at Anfield in what was, despite going down to a defeat, it was a heartening performance after a recent horror shows on the road. Our triumphant cup run will have to wait until January after Tuesday's League Cup exit to Southampton. And also this week, the Amex has been nominated as a stadium in England's bid to host the 2021 Women's Euros. The UK transfer window shut this week for Championship sides, and we only saw Richie Tal go out on loan, which basically means Victor Gyökeres will be here at least till January. As for Scalotto, who knows? Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back from what I've just been told for the first time in 18 months, and this is not... How has this happened, Matthew Wilkin?
Good afternoon, chaps. How are we?
Hello. It wasn't just Richie Tal that went out during that window. I mean, obviously, Baldock and Hemed went out as well. But if you're talking about the ridiculous sort of last-minute sort of transfer stuff, then, yeah, Richie Tal, he's gone back to Rotherham. They obviously like him up there, even though Rotherham's a weird place.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But this whole... I was going to say stagnated, not staccato.
Staggered.
The staggered transfer window thing. It's just a bit weird, isn't it?
It's a bit weird, but I think that I personally feel it was absolutely the correct decision to close the window before the season started. And I was actually kind of, it's interesting that the European leagues didn't follow suit. I would have been in the opinion that it would have been a sensible thing for everyone to have done it because it gets farcical. I know that not every single league starts at the same time, but it does get kind of farcical.
Yeah, but Matt, doesn't this give the European leagues an unfair advantage in terms of European competition and getting their squads ready?
It could possibly, yeah. I agree with Al. If you're going to do it, it certainly makes sense to do it before the football season starts, but have all of them in line. Championship, yeah, that's a little bit different. I don't think that's an issue, but totally agree with Al. All the European teams in line, just make it easy.
We've now got our squad together, and we're going to talk about the kids a little bit later on, but one of them was Victor Gyökeres, which was linked to be going out to Sunderland. We've obviously seen enough for him to stay.
Yep, scored a lot of goals, scored again last night, is that right?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
He did, so I think that's about 13 in 16 games or something I read. I thought he played quite well on Tuesday. I know we're going to come on to the Saints game a little bit later, but definitely a promising one there, yeah.
Okay. Now, Matt, we're absolutely delighted to have you back in here. Now, normally when you've been, it's 18 months between visits, you've normally been off around the world somewhere. So what have you been up to in the last 18 months?
That's right, yeah. I was living abroad for 4 years. I always made a promise to myself, if Albion get to the Premier League, then I would move back to Brighton. And my second promise was that I'd go to every single game, which I achieved last season.
You did every single one?
Everyone, home and away. Cost a lot of money, took up a lot of time, but it was a promise I made to myself. And I think it's kind of a pilgrimage, a rite of passage. Every Albion fan should
do
one full season.
Yeah. So, I mean, how was it for you? I mean, what was your most... what do you think you got the most brownie points personally for the away trips last season?
In terms of best stadiums or best atmosphere or what?
You felt you earned your wings.
I think the last week, because, you know, you're getting towards the end of the season, we'd already stayed up. We had Man City on a Wednesday night, I think it was.
That's right.
So up to Manchester on a Wednesday night, got back at 4 a.m. to work on the Thursday, and then we're back up to Liverpool on the Friday. So I think that last week was just kind of ticking boxes, to be honest.
Matt, it's funny you should mention Liverpool, because we went there last Saturday, and as I mentioned in the intro there, I mean, myself and Al have done various other shows with the Liverpool media over the last week or so, leading up to that and afterwards. And our fears going into that game were pretty much... we thought we were going to get stuffed. Yeah. Let's not beat about the bush. So... we didn't. We made a good fist of it, and there was a bit of a different game plan from Chris.
Definitely. I was really pleased. I mean, if we look at the away performances over the last year, something had to change. Something had to change. And so the obvious change was obviously bringing in Bissouma for Gross, which I thought was a really, really positive move. Yeah. I think the issue in away games has been when the ball does go up to Gross and Murray, great players, very technical, but slow. We didn't have kind of that pace to push push forward. So I think it was a really positive move by Chris. And strange thing to say, despite the fact we lost, I think it was a really, really encouraging performance.
It was a very heartening performance. I mean, especially in the second half, Liverpool, who, let's face it, could open up any defence, they really struggled. I felt that they played in a similar way to the way that Manchester United did for the whole game down here. Although Man U scored two goals. I mean, one was a gimme and one was a penalty. But they just seemed to run out of ideas. And I know we could have nicked it at the end. I mean, would it have been deserved over the 90 minutes? Who cares? You know, it's about sticking the ball in the back of the net. And the really frustrating thing, and this is so typically Albion, especially those who have watched the club for years and years and years, will know that we have this indelible history of taking out the revolver and shooting it at our own feet. Because that's not to say that if we hadn't done that, we'd have definitely got a draw. It doesn't work that way. But if we'd have had a little bit more savvy, a little bit more wit, I mean, it's the free kick that brought the goal. You know, you're face palming all over the city. It's incredible that we could actually just sort of go ahead and gift Salah with a. I mean, he finished it brilliant, but you know, you do not give him half a sniff.
Okay, but I mean, there was other incidents, but prior to that, which we'll just have a quick look at. I mean, you mentioned Bissouma coming in for Gross.
Yeah.
Do you think that is going to be the thing going into away games this season, where Chris is actually going to, like, I mean, obviously Pascal was our player of the season last year, but he didn't really do an awful lot away from home.
He didn't, no. If you look at all of the good things that he did, or the majority of the goals that he scored, the assists that he made, they were at home.
Did he score away from home?
He didn't, no.
I don't think he did, no.
Did he put an assist in for, like, away from home?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
I believe so.
Sorry.
Yeah,
but, I'll stop griping about him.
No, you're right. And something did have to change. If you look at the statistics, I think it's 16 away games, 12 losses, 4 draws, no wins. And in a lot of those games, it's not even that we were just being profligate in front of goal. It was the fact we weren't creating chances. So I think bringing in someone a little bit more forward-minded, a little bit more attacking, had to happen.
Well, this is the thing, and we mentioned this after the Watford game, that...
You shudder when you think of that game, don't you?
Well, before Bissouma came on, I mean, we're watching it, and we're watching it side on, and you're seeing the lines of four moving, and then Glenn Murray, but no one was playing between the lines, and Gross was just getting the ball was coming up to him, and he wasn't doing anything.
I've
with
got
it.
To say,
and then Bissouma came on, and all of a sudden there was this burst of energy.
A spark, yeah.
Gross, he seems to be running through custard. I mean, he was, to be honest, in the first half against Man U as well. I'm not sure what's going on. Is he just not fit? I mean, I know you said he takes a couple of games to get going. I can't believe that as an excuse, because everyone else has the pre-season, everyone else has their training. It's not as though it's not his first season. So yeah, I'm totally with Matt. Even though it's slightly kamikaze, you think, to put someone as twinkle-toed and inventive as Bissouma up against Liverpool, you know, it's slightly sort of you really are risking it. But if you're going to have that bit more, as you say, a bit more energy and a bit more variety, joie de vivre, yeah, then joie de vivre, the game of life. Okay, if you're going to have that bit more energy, then yes, you need it, because, you know, yes, Gross, he can stand still and ping a pass, but no, we need a lot more movement.
Mm. Matt, we also went into the game without the own goal machine. And it was a first start for Liam Balogun.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic. Probably him and Bissouma, I thought, were the best two players, actually. But, you know, he's no mug, is he? This is someone that's played in a World Cup. You know, even when he came on in the Man United game, he just slipped in straight away, no problems.
He made it look easy, didn't
he? Yeah, and I think he's got that little burst of pace as well to get out of trouble. He looks a little bit more mobile than Duncan Duffy, actually, at the back. So really, really encouraging.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there was that element of doubt and fear when we let Goldson go, and we're seeing, well, I mean, obviously he's playing in Scotland and he's doing really well up there, and the Rangers,
well, to be honest, so would you.
Absolutely raving.
To be honest, so would you and Matt, actually, AD, so, but, you know.
Look, you know, you can only play what's against you, and, you know, and those...
And Airdrieonians, so, you know, they're up for it.
But, you know, Rangers supporters are no mugs, and, you know, they've gone away, some tricky games in Europe. I mean, but teams we've not heard of, but... Playing on potato fields and things.
I would have loved to have kept Goldson as third or fourth choice, but you can totally understand he wants games.
Absolutely, and he's getting them at Rangers, absolutely.
Okay, so back to the Liverpool game, then we've got... funny, not talking about the Liverpool fan, Connor Goldson there. One player who certainly earned his stripes was Matty Ryan.
Yeah, one save in particular, wasn't it, down to his right?
Yeah.
really, really quick instincts. He pulled off something similar in the Man United game, a shot from Pogba.
I think he did it in the World Cup a couple of times
Yeah. Although, I know, it's been mentioned so many times, he's not the tallest goalkeeper, but I think that does give him agility and spring.
Well, he's close to the ground when it's a shot.
True.
I'm still got certain question marks over him, because that's my own personal opinion, because I like a goalkeeper to dominate the box a little bit more.
You've got Duffy, I mean, even if you had a goalkeever that's 6'8", you'd still have Duffy dominating everything.
But I mean, as a shot stopper, let's put it this way, he earns us more points than he loses us.
He does. I'd also say with his feet, I can't, this is dangerous to say, isn't it? I can't remember him making a mistake, you know, on a pass back or using his feet at all.
I think he's belted the ball against an attacker and it's landed to safety. But yeah, I mean, they do. I think Stockdale did it before him, leave it to the very, very last second, and you know, the forward's charging him down with inches to spare. Yeah, I mean, for all the hype and the considerations and concerns we had in his very first games, I mean, let it be a lesson to everyone who sort of wants to judge a player after one or two games. It's totally unfair to do so. We've got an issue with Jackenbach, which I'm sure we'll talk about with the Southampton game later. You know, the number of people judging them just on the back of one game when they're asked to do something else and they're not got the same players with them. So, you know, when we had concerns over Ryan for the Man City game at the beginning of last season and the Leicester game and even the Atletico Madrid friendly, which people sort of like tearing their hair out over, let's face it, you're absolutely right, Ryan has earned us more points than he's lost.
Okay, well, but the Liverpool goal then, I mean, it was, let's face it, it was a bit of a ricket from a young Eve, but Balogun laid it off to Bissouma, whose first touch is too heavy and Milner is on him in a flash, so I'm prepared to give Milner a lot of credit for this, actually. Firmino finds Salah, who finds the back of the net, but yeah. Matty Ryan did get a good hand
He almost pushed it round the corner, it actually hit the post to go in. I actually felt really, really sorry for Bissouma, because that was his only mistake in the whole game.
Yes.
And what was brilliant, actually, after that, he didn't sulk.
Exactly.
He stayed looking for the ball. He kept on collecting it. He kept on driving forward. So he didn't shy away. So,
and that shows a lot of maturity for someone.
It does.
So young.
And let's be honest, we're not going to be the first
team. Happy birthday to him for this week, by the way.
22, wasn't it? Yeah. We're not going to be the first team that gets charged down by Liverpool with a high press, you know.
But therein lies the issue, is it? I mean, you know, I think it was Duffy that played off the free kick in the first place? I think there is a bit more of a collective responsibility. Yes, Bissouma miscontrolled it, and in that particular instance, you do not miscontrol it. But you just think, why did they take it short in the first place? I mean, it's not even being wise after the event. When you take it, you think, oh my God, right, you can see this. Where is the out ball? There wasn't, when you're looking at it sort of, you know, across the screen, it's not that obvious as to where. Sometimes they'll work the out ball, but if you miscontrol it, and this was to the tune of no more than 18 inches away from his feet, when you've got that, I mean, hopefully it's a lesson learned. Yes, we've lost the game. Yes, we've lost 3 points. And let's say, if Liverpool hadn't scored, I don't think they would have been quite so bad in the second half, because they'd have been pushing all the more.
Well, let's not forget they did actually hit the bar as well.
Well, absolutely.
I mean that was an interesting challenge from Dale Stevens when he pushed over Firmino. But it was. I mean, there was a couple of incidents there as well. But we'll talk about it in a minute. But Hume's game plan this week. He actually had one.
Well, no, I think it's just that we just did it a lot better. You know, if forget the game at the end of last season. Liverpool wanted a place in the Champions League. We were on the beach. So, I mean, this is the point that Klopp was making, and I don't disagree. I think when you've got the look at the game last season down here, Liverpool just decided, you know, from our corners, they were just firing up the other end, and off they went. And that day, they were unplayable. But what I saw, certainly in the second half against Liverpool last week, was what we saw against Manchester United and Arsenal, where everyone was so much more disciplined. And like I say, yes, Liverpool created chances, and yes, Matty Ryan saved them. But I don't recall, did they didn't have too many chances in the second half.
If you think we pretty much kept Salah, Firmino and Mane quiet, and not many teams are going to do that. I know Salah scored, but you know, we did keep them relatively quiet.
But I think it was nullifying the supply line to them.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, the plan was, which... we almost pulled it off was to stay in the game for as long as possible and then give it a go in the last 10 minutes. And in the last 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, we were the better team. If anyone was going to score, it was going to be us.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of chances there. One for Knockaert, which his first touch let him down slightly and his volley was just behind him and it flashed wide. That was a fantastic opportunity.
And then the gross header.
Let's talk about that gross header, but let's talk about the man who provided the cross. We've had two games to look at him now, and what are your thoughts on Martin Montoya?
He looks like he's slipped in seamlessly. You know, it's always a worry because we know how good Bruno is there, how solid he is. Montoya, you know, he's obviously had experience. He's played with really good teams, but he's slipped in perfectly. He's got a little burst of pace to get away from trouble. And the cross, as you say, that he put in for Gross at the end there, if that's a sign of things to come, then long may it continue.
Yeah. This afternoon is going to be quite a lot interesting because so far he's played against Manchester United and Liverpool. Now, today we're playing against Fulham, who is a side that at the Amex we should actually be attacking a little bit more, so we don't know what he's like so much with a raiding fullback. Sometimes you know, Bruno can go on a kamikaze raid down the right hand side ahead of Knockaert. Is Montoya going to do the same? I think therein lies a better example that we'll get as to comparing Montoya with Bruno.
Now, I mean, you spent some time living in Spain, you had a season ticket at Atleti, didn't you?
I went to most of the games at Atleti. Yeah.
So I mean, was he a player that you were aware of while you're over there?
I can't pretend that he was, no. But having looked at his history,
Barcelona and Valencia is no mugs, is it?
No, exactly. I'm quite surprised that we picked him up, or rather that someone else didn't. I think bigger teams were looking at him at some point in the past.
Well, he rejected Liverpool, didn't he?
Right. But it's like our friend Justin Brintle. I can't remember yet. He said it on the show. It was in the pub. But he said,
"Is there a difference?"
Not really. But he was saying, like, "Yeah, we'd sign this guy called Montoya." And I kept on looking at his show. And I go, "Why do they keep showing him against Barcelona? Oh, he's playing for Barcelona."
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, I mean, he's got a hell of a pedigree, and you just think, "Yeah, I agree with Matt. Why? How come other teams?" I think it's quite a coup. I think it's actually probably the biggest coup of the transfer window. Yes, we've had some big money signings, and we've broken our record several times, but I actually think that Montoya is the marquee signing of the summer. And when you look at his track record...
Yeah, I'd understand it a little bit more if he was 32, 33, but he's in
27.
His prime. He's in his prime right now. So,
absolutely.
Well, let's put it this way. He's the only Champions League winner we actually signed this year.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, that was an absolute peach of a cross from Montoya. And, I mean... It was a gross-like cross.
It was, but
are we going to give the goalkeeper the credit here? Because I don't think it was a bad header.
It wasn't a bad header. I've seen it again from behind, and it wasn't as far in the corner as I thought it would be. It's a save that he should make, let's put it that way.
Are we saying that we wish that chance fell to Glenn Murray?
If it fell to Glenn, I think we could have got out of Anfield with a point.
I'm really not so sure, because it would have taken quite a glance. I think that actually the firm header rather than a glancing header was probably the better option.
It was a comfortable height.
Yep. He headed down. I mean, it was first and foremost, it was on target. The keeper had to react, and you're quite right. I think it was a save he should have made. The keeper would have been disappointed if he didn't do it. But to actually then have the glancing header, I think it's a greater skill, which, yes, you know, Glenn Murray can do, but we've seen him screw them wide. So, you know, I'm not going to be too harsh on Gross for this. You know, he got there. The Liverpool defenders didn't pick him up. It was a good run. And you just think it's just one of those things.
Okay, Matt, before we move on, a quick word on Liverpool. Do you see them challenging Man City for the title?
I do, actually, yeah. I think they've always had firepower. I think their front three is as good, if not the best in the league. The problem they had last year was conceding goals. This season they haven't let in any.
No. And they've addressed the problems they had last season, which was...
And Van Dijk at the back looks absolutely solid. He looks a superb player. Yeah.
Well, I was saying on another show last week, in a parallel universe, we could have actually had Joe Gomez and Van Dijk playing in our defence last year.
Yeah, but in another parallel universe, you could have been playing. So, you know, let's not go too far down that road.
I like that one. I like that one.
Okay, so you
see you've been pushing him really, really close.
I think so, yeah.
Closer than last year.
Closer than last year, certainly. I think it will be between City and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. We are, as ever, delighted to be brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And I'm just going to pass over the shirt of the week over here. My printer's broken, so I'm going to have to go old school and do it on the phone this week.
I like that old school. Okay. 21st century technology, but it's
old
school.
If you could just describe that for me.
How do I describe that? Okay, it's a red and white shirt. I would say it's covered in diamonds. Would you say that's diamonds?
Yeah, it's diamond check, isn't diamonds? It? But not the old Lyle and Scott diamonds.
No, and not symmetrical, and not all the diamonds are the same shape.
Yeah, it looks like TV interference.
So the shirt is made by Umbro, long sleeved, and the sponsor is Citroen. I'm just trying to zoom in.
Has he photoshopped out the badge?
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, it's a kind of a pale blue. Yeah, we've just completely ruined your phone. I'm now reading your text messages. Okay, bearing in mind it's sponsored by Citroën, I'm going to therefore assume it's a French shirt, and I'm going to therefore plump for Marseille.
That is incorrect.
Is it French?
Okay. It is not French.
It's not French. Oh, okay.
And neither is Citroën, apparently, according to this.
Spanish.
Yes, it is.
It's Spanish. I recognise that badge from somewhere. It's a La Liga team, right?
Yes, it is.
Doing better than me. So if it's red and white, let's go for a really bizarre Atletico shirt.
No, that's wrong. I should read you what it's going for. It. Here you go then. This is the 1995 to 1996 away shirt of Spanish side Celta Vigo. Based in Galicia region of northwest Spain.
Galicia.
They play at the 29,000 capacity Abanca Belgados Stadium.
How's that pronounced then, Matt?
Belgados.
Bloody hell. The shirt sponsors Citroën built their Spanish car plant over the road from the stadium and were shirt sponsors from 1985 to 2016, the longest shirt sponsor deal ever in Spain and one of the longest in the world. Another shirt fact for you, their deal with kit manufacturer Umbro ran from 1986 to 2010. Again, one of the longest kit deals for a football team in the world. They are nicknamed, what do you know what their nickname is, Matt?
No idea.
Vigo. No, no.
The Os Celeste.
The Os Celeste, the stars.
And
is it?
The Sky Blues, apparently.
Okay. Oh, the Sky, yes. Star. Okay, right.
And they were formed in 1923 after a merger between two local sides, both desperate to break into the top league of Spanish football. It worked, and they've enjoyed over 50 seasons in La Liga football. When they were formed in 1923, their first manager was called Francis Cugy. So who can tell us something about him? Well, I have no idea how this came about, but he was an Englishman. And he came in, he was a one-club man playing for Sunderland for 12 seasons, during which time he won the First Division title, appeared as an England international, and took the job as the first ever manager of Celta Vigo. Some years later, they took on another Englishman as manager, Colin Addison, who was also there between 86 to 87. Manuel Rodriguez Alfonso holds the records for the most appearances for Celta, with over 550 games played between 66 and 82. All-time top scorer is Iago Aspas, who's made over 250 appearances for them. He spent some time at Liverpool as well. He scored 120 goals in that time. Former Celta striker David Rodriguez made 10 or so appearances for the Albion
Spanish Rodney
in 2014 before returning to Spain, where he has played for 9 clubs and made over 500 appearances. Now this made me think, actually, thinking about a Spanish Rodney, that there's we've had a few Spanish players over the years, and I just wondered where they were now.
Have you just Matt, what is Spanish for where are they now?
You're putting me on the spot. Donde?
Donde
eres? Donde eres ahora? Donde eres ahora, I think.
Well, David Rodriguez, he's still playing, and he's actually at Osasuna at the moment.
That's in Pamplona.
Are they in Liga B at the moment?
And they could be in the Segunda, yeah.
Okay. Not Liga B.
Adrian Colunga, do you remember him?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
His last appearance was to be was getting sent off.
I don't remember that. But where is he now?
He's actually just retired. But on the 2nd of September 2017, 32-year-old Colunga switched to the Indian Super League with FC Goa. After since with Mallorca and Cypriot club North Assis Famagusta, that's where
Cowdy was.
He made his debut on the 16th of December, scoring in the last minute of a 5-1 victory against Delhi Dynamos. The 25th of January, on the 25th of January this year, Colunga's contract was terminated by a mutual agreement after he refused to play second fiddle to countryman Ferran Coromanias, and five days later he announced his retirement. Now, Fran Sandaza.
Wow. Okay.
He went to St Johnson and was never heard of again.
No, he's still playing.
Not in the Scottish League, is he?
He's not in the Scottish League. He was actually playing in La Liga last season.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. And scored a few goals as well. He was actually playing
for Osasuna.
No, he was playing for Girona. He helped Girona get promoted to Liga for the first time in whatever years. But he earned himself a move to China, and he's currently playing for Chinese club Qingdao Hunwei.
Raking in the bucks, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Why not?
Mega
why
bucks.
Not?
But yeah. You know, I mean, I can't believe it. He's still only 33.
Sandaza.
It seems like
it was 6 years ago he was with us, wasn't it? 7 years ago. Yeah. His scoring record was pretty good, but then he always get the fourth of four goals.
That's
and
right. Yeah.
Like that,
or he always came on for the last 5 minutes or so, didn't he?
Yes, yeah, and still managed to do it. We're playing Fulham.
Yes.
Later this afternoon, and there's plenty of Albion Fulham links that we'll talk about presently, but one fellow who played for Fulham for 11 years and then finished his career here was Simon Morgan, as Dick Knight put it, the most talented cripple he's ever seen. I caught up with him earlier this week and I started by asking him how come it was he started at Fulham.
Cool, it seems so long ago now.
Only 28 years, mate.
Yeah, that's all. I had a serious knee injury. Seems to be the story of my career at Leicester. And when I got fit again, the then manager, David Pleat, said I wasn't in his plans. So they offloaded me to Fulham, who were in the division below, not in a particularly good place or state. And we didn't have a good couple of first years down there, eventually getting relegated to the lowest division. But actually, that turned out to be the best thing that's ever happened, because we turned the corner, won 3 promotions in 5 years, and look at the club now in the Premier League and coming down to play Brighton in a fantastic new stadium on the weekend.
Absolutely. There's certain parallels with Brighton and Fulham. I mean, you know, Fulham had their kind of crashing and burning years during the 1990s. What was happening at Fulham at the time where there's such a contrast with what's happening then compared to what's happening now? What was happening there?
It was just a bit of a desolate place, to be honest with you. I think one of the owners had previously tried to merge Fulham and Queen's Park Rangers. That hadn't gone down very well with the fans, obviously. Things weren't going well on the pitch. The stadium was old and dilapidated. So was the team. It just wasn't very good. And I think when you get into a spiral like that, sometimes it can be very difficult to get out of it.
Mm.
But we did. I mean, I was actually the captain when we got relegated to the lowest division, so that wasn't a great personal moment. But it was actually where we needed to go, because we bottomed out. Ian Branford came in, really sorted us out as a squad, got us fit, got us been much more professional. And we started the long climb back through the leagues. And to be honest, I wouldn't change a thing, because going through the pain of relegation to the bottom division made all the promotions that much more sweeter.
Again, I mean, we were talking parallels again, because I suppose that you have to go through the pain and anguish in order to appreciate the joys and the highs that you can get in football all that much more.
Absolutely. Fulham and Brighton, I think, if anything, it was a bit worse for Brighton, because obviously they lost the stadium.
Mm.
They had to move around a bit. But, you know, ask anyone who enjoyed those happy times at Falmer, and they'll say they were fantastic times. So, again, the 4,000 or 5,000 Fulham fans who were there during that worst time and then saw that promotion from the bottom division, I think they find it all the more sweeter now. And they can sit back and enjoy what's happening at the moment.
Well, I think they could probably say the same that we could. As Attila the stockbroker once said, they could say with satisfaction, we were there. I mean, you were there for quite a while. How long were you the club skipper in the end?
Well, I was there for 11 years. I think I was captain for 3 or 4 of those. Obviously, we got promotion back to out of the bottom division.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was probably Division 2 in those days. Is that long ago?
The club changed their name, yeah.
And that's when Mohamed Al-Fayed came in and took over.
Yeah.
And suddenly there was, you know, Kevin Keegan was there, and then we were signing the likes of Chris Coleman and Peter Beardsley. And, the club basically changed overnight. But it was just fantastic, and you know, we got another couple of promotions.
What on earth was Michael Jackson all about?
he'd been at Harrods that morning with the chairman, and you know, say what you like about Mohamed Al-Fayed, he came to all the home games. He came in the dressing room before and after the game, and after the game he said, "I've got a surprise for you boys," and Michael Jackson walked in, which believe me was a bit of a surprise, but.
Blimey. Yeah, which direction? Did he walk backwards?
There was a bit of singing in the dressing room, but I've got to say, just fantastic days, absolutely brilliant times, and something you look back on now when you meet up with the old players, it's just a great laugh. And
absolutely,
to be successful on the pitch just puts that icing on the cake.
I mean, you were appreciated enough that the club granted you a testimonial.
Yeah, that was great. I think it was, thanks very much, you've done your bit, here's a testimonial.
Yeah, sling your rucksack.
You know, we don't mind if you leave and go somewhere else. So, it was a wonderful, wonderful time for me. But I had a bad knee injury, and I knew I wasn't going to get back in the team in the Premier League under John Tigana. So that was my chance to finish off and have a year at Brighton.
I was about to say, so I mean, basically you came to us. I mean, I assume that the link would have been Mickey Adams because basically he took you on nearly broken. I mean, the stories seem to be legendary that basically you turned up at training and never, you're reading the copy of the Daily Mirror all the time and just played on Saturday. Was it, I mean, I know these
Don't
are kind of, is it an apocryphal?
Bobby Zamora, Charlie Oakway tell you. So Paul Rogers, listen, there's a bit more to it than that.
So you did train once?
Once or twice. Now, by the end, I was literally training once a week. I was on my last leg, so to speak. But it was just the most fantastic year. I was so lucky to be able to finish my career with a year like that at a fabulous club with such a great squad of players. Really lucky.
I mean, we know that sort of, you know, it was the team that Mickey built. I mean, it was a kind of a zeitgeist for us at the time. We'd just come back to Brighton from having been turfed out the Goldstone and 2 years at Gillingham, you know, and everything was exciting, and we had Bobby Zamora scoring goals for fun. And like I say, the team that Mickey built, some real... Actually, you talk us through that team. We think we know what the characters are like, but you were there, you played with them, you worked with them. Talk us through that sort of class of 01.
Oh, well. So you had Michel Kuipers in goal, former Dutch Marine.
Did you ever argue with him?
Oh, yeah, all the time. We just used to wind him up every morning. Poor old Charlie started on him as soon as he got out of the car.
Right.
It didn't take long for him to wind him up, but just had a sensational season.
Yeah.
I mean, we tried to keep him out, but if they did get through us, Michel put the ball out the net somehow.
Yeah.
Danny Cullip, centre-half.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, walking into that dressing room the first day frightened me, believe me.
You really?
Had Charlie, Danny Cullip, and they were all snarling. And I thought, well, if they're like this in training, what are they going to be like on a match day?
Well, you'd have had Dodge, you'd have had Carpenter, you'd have had... yeah.
So me and Dodge were the old pros who sat down and had a cup of tea every day. And
right.
Just laughed at the antics of everyone else. Charlie wanted to fight the world. so did Danny Cullip. And of course, we had Bobby Zamora, who scored a goal every week.
Was he a snarler in the changing rooms?
No. Bobby's a lover, not a fighter. He was everyone in that squad knew their own job, and Bobby's job was to put the ball in the net, and he did that fantastically well. But I think one thing about that squad. Yes, there were real personalities, but there was some real quality in there as well.
Yeah.
Paul Watson could strike a ball better than anyone I've seen in my career.
Really?
He was magnificent. Richard Carpenter was a real good midfield player as well. You had Harty on the wing, could supply real quality. So, you know, I think we did ourselves down a little bit because we tried to turn it. It was us against the world, and, you know, we're at this state. We haven't got our own proper stadium.
Mm.
And I think Mickey and then Peter Taylor liked to use that to keep us wound up and motivated for games. But it was a great team spirit and great team on the pitch.
Is the story true? We've heard it from other people. So you were obviously there. Peter Taylor's first day. He's got Bob Booker calls training. And you're basically trying to belt the living daylight out of each other. Now, I know you said you trained once a week, but were you part of that training session where Peter...
No, I wasn't there that day.
Right. So you can't confirm or deny...
If there were ever any tackles or fights going on in training, I can assure you I was nowhere near them. So
you were putting your feet up, drinking tea.
Saturday 3 o'clock was when I switched on.
Right.
And I left all the running around in the midweek to the other guys.
I mean, you say about this team spirit. I mean, did it actually, grumble with it? Did it gripe with anyone that's saying, hang on, how come Morgs isn't training? I know, was there anything ever said apart from obviously Charlie winding you up, who couldn't not say anything, but... You know, was it that kind of camaraderie that they could actually appreciate and understand, you know, that for you to train would have meant you wouldn't been able to play?
Yeah, there was a lot of things said. I think in my defence, when I did sign, and after my 32nd medical, Mickey said, look, you've got to get fit, and you're going to get fit with the rest of them. So for the first two or three months, certainly till Mickey left, I did train. Mm. Whatever anyone tells you, I did train.
I know, I'm teasing. Yeah,
every day. But as it wound on at the end of the season, yeah, of course, the lads were giving me loads of stick for, right, for, you know, another day off and another cup of tea, or not even turning up in a few instances. But listen, when 3 o'clock came on a Saturday,
listen, we saw what you could do. So then, you know, us fans certainly would have no gripes about it. You know, you were, well, I mean, from my point of view, I mean, you used to sit in the south stand with Dean. You know, where you'd either get sort of soaked or sunburnt on the same day. Sometimes, you know, you saw how ridiculous that stadium was. I mean, it's a hell of a way for you to end your career at, you know, a ramshackle, temporary seated, you know, thing where you've got a club that's got no money. You think, you know. I hope you look back on it with fondness, certainly at the Albion, because we certainly appreciate what you were doing, irrespective of all the nonsense about, oh, Simon never trains. Well, actually, he does the business at 3 o'clock, which is the time that we pay to see you.
Yeah, and to be honest, it was a fantastic year. I knew all about with Dean. You know, Mickey didn't pull any punches. He said, this is where we're at. He says, but you will love this dressing room. You'll love being around the other players, and you know what? We're not quite sure how the season will go, but we will give it everything, and we'll see what happens. Now, you know, the ironic thing was that we started so well, it got him a move to Leicester. Yeah. He disappeared, laughing with his wheelbarrow full of money. but then Peter came in. Peter was very clever. You know, he wasn't there long, but he added a few things in himself. But he just kept things ticking over. And, you know, Bob Booker ran the show mostly. The thing is, when you get on a roll, before you even know it, it's February, March, April time, and you're up the top of the league, and then the penny drops, you've got a chance of going up. And fortunately, the characters and the professionalism and the experience in the dressing room got us over the line. So, along with a goal or two from Bobby.
Absolutely. I mean, I think probably I missed very, very few games with Dean over the 12 years. Well, probably about four or five. But one of those I did miss was in that promotion season, was the home game against Reading. It was bucketing down. And I think that, you know, they were giving it loads. It was a real top of the table clash. Remind me, you played in that, didn't you? You must have.
I think it was a night game, wasn't it?
It was a night game, yeah.
Yeah, at that stage of the season, two games a week was just a little bit beyond me.
Right.
So I think the boss brought Adam Virgo in, and he was brilliant. And I remember the evening, you're right, it was a horrible old night.
Yeah.
It just seemed to rain every home game that season.
Sometimes it was sunny, always sunny during the day, always bucketed down at night, yeah. But, I mean, you guys must have partied hard after that game, because that was so good.
No, they didn't party at all, the boys.
No.
Nothing like that happened. I think we partied after a 0-0 draw at Cambridge on the first day. So, it was just great spirit, great set of lads, and the supporters more than played their part. Because, you know, you listen to some fan bases and the stuff they moan about. Compare that to what the Brighton fans have been through, and the way they turned up sometimes in awful conditions at that stadium and supported the boys magnificently. It was a very special season for me, and a great way to finish.
Absolutely. I mean, us wearing all plastic capes looking like a collection of the Ku Klux Klan. So it's a brilliant way to finish your career with a trophy and a medal and superb. So what did you go on to do after you were done, after you said, right, OK, the knee has beaten me now?
Yeah, so part of the deal with Fulham was I'd go back there and start work on the football administrative side, because I'd done while I was playing, coaching and training, and being a manager just held no appeal to me whatsoever.
Right.
Obviously, I didn't like training anyway, so for me then to turn into a coach, I thought, no, that's not really going to work.
Right.
So I did a degree while I was playing, and then since then I've been in football administration, worked at Fulham, then moved to the Premier League, and I'm currently the head of football relations at the Premier League.
And what does that job involve?
That basically is anything to do with on the pitch, anything that happens is under my remit. So it's the administration before the games, anything that happens with referees or teams during the game, and then mopping up afterwards as well.
Does that mean you're the one that dishes out bans then and things like that?
No, that's the FA. They do all the discipline.
Right.
We mostly do the administration, me and my team, make sure everything's set for the game, support the clubs, make sure the referees are on form. And we're looking at VAR at the moment. Obviously, sure. Brighton had a VAR match earlier this week.
Yes, we did.
So it's plenty on the remit. Nice and busy, and it means I can watch lots of football. So I'm very lucky.
Fair enough. So talking of watching football, I mean, your two old clubs are getting together this weekend. What are you going to make of this game then?
Well, obviously big changes to both clubs and squads over the summer. Mm-hmm. I think both of them have bought in very well. I know Chris is very pleased with the work that Brighton did to get the players in. Brighton obviously very good at home.
Swap goalkeepers, if I recall correctly, actually.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, Fulham have just started to pick up results after all their changes. Yeah. So Brighton very good at home. I I'm going to sit on the fence and say a draw, but it wouldn't surprise me if it did go the way of the home side, because simply they have been so good at home.
Sure. Simon, thanks for all you did for us back in 2002. You know, you brought a real sort of sense of experience and purpose to the team. I think it was you were certainly one of the mainstays of actually getting us up and promoting it. It's great that you had a good time here. We certainly enjoyed your time here. And hopefully, if you're in the town, do come in and see us and come on the show.
Will do. Thanks for having me, and loved my time at Brighton, and have been made very welcome on my returns since to this fabulous new stadium. So, but I will sit on the fence and think it'll be a draw.
Fair enough. Okay. Ever the diplomat. Simon Morgan, thank you very much indeed.
That was Simon Morgan talking to Alan earlier this week. Okay, you were listening to the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on our podcast and on DAB, and of course in association with OldFootballShirts.com. I'm here with Matthew Wilkin and Alan Wares. I am, of course, Aidy Packham, and we have quite a lot of links with Fulham.
Isn't Simon a lovely fellow? I mean, it was just an absolute pleasure to talk to him.
Yeah, I've seen him out on the road, and he is a lovely bloke.
He is a lovely fellow. You know, he's obviously he's a massive Fulham legend. I mean, 11 years. There, I mean, I'll say testimony and everything.
30
like
goals as well.
Absolutely, but one season here and he loved it. But yeah, I'm just trying to think. I mean, off the top of your head, Wilco, Albion Fulham links.
Is that whole side, wasn't it? What was it, 2001, 2002?
Yeah. Well, Mickey nicked them all from Fulham, didn't he?
That's right.
Fulham or Brentford.
So how many of that side were Fulham links?
Okay, I think there was Watto.
Yeah.
Was Chippy there?
No, he came from Cardiff.
No, but he had been at Fulham.
Had, at some point.
I think Cullip was at Brentford. Brooker was at Fulham.
Brooker, yeah.
But then you also think of those who went to other clubs. You know, obviously Zamora played later at Fulham.
Well, basically, it's the ambassador's reception, as I like to call it, is, you know, the plan is if you play for Brighton and Fulham, you become an Albion ambassador.
That's Alan Mullery, yeah, and Liam Rossini and Steve Sidwell
and Bobby Zamora.
Well, I don't think Rossini is an ambassador. I mean, he's actually just he's working with Simon Rusk with the under 23s.
Yeah, but he is dishing out the Ferrero Rocher, so that's all
fair
right.
Enough. Okay, yeah. So yes, if you play for Albion and Fulham, which means that actually I think in that case no. Barry Lloyd didn't play for Brighton, did he? So, Barry, you're not going to be an embarrasser.
Well, there you go. Well, it is a leak. Okay, well, let's just move it on to last Tuesday then, when Southampton came a knocking in the League Cup, and it was all changed for the Albion. But before I say all changed for the Albion, can someone please explain to me why Southampton's away kit is red?
That's the most pointless away kit or third strip I've ever seen.
It must
seen.
Be fourth or fifth kit, surely.
They introduced it this season. It's a third kit, apparently. But
The thing is, I can only assume it's for teams that are playing if they're playing against the likes of, say, Fulham, where they've got white in their kit, because that was a red sort of dual. It worked, you know. It works.
It was red and red.
Well, the thing is, if you've got blue and white against red and white, isn't going to be allowed to happen. But blue and white against all red is, so there will be times, well, like for instance, they could use it then, but it's also shades of, do you remember back in the days, 25 years ago at the Goldstone, Reading turned up,
that's right,
with their away kit was blue and yellow hoops instead of blue and white hoops, which is even more ridiculous, but I think that was their second kit, and then so the referee said, well, no, sorry, this ain't going to happen, and Reading hadn't brought their second kit, well, they didn't have a replacement kit, and so the Albion offered Reading to play in one of Brighton's away kits, and John Medeski, who'd just taken over, absolutely flatly refused because it didn't have his auto-trader thing across it. So there was the game where Reading played in that kit and the Albion had to play their home game in an away kit. And I think it might be, I could be wrong, I think it might be either the Chewitts kit or the pink kit. Which is actually quite a sort of, as protocols go, is actually quite insulting.
Well, there's also a game against Derby where their kit man completely forgot their kit.
Really?
And basically they ended up having to... kit was made by Herrera at the same time.
Was that playing here?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they wore...
Now you mentioned our
training kit, was it?
They wore our training kit, yeah.
Well, of course, we did have a blue and black striped away kit once, which was probably one of the best away kits we had.
Absolutely, Internazionale.
Yeah, we got to wear it once.
Do you know what? I don't actually recall.
Ask Phil Shelley. I'm sure we wore it once.
Then, of course, there was that season not so long ago with Dean when Dick Knight had the brilliant idea to have three kits, all of them with blue in them.
All of them blue, that's
right. Yeah, but the thing is, that if it's dark blue, I think it's a different thing entirely. Dark blue and light blue. There are cultures where they don't actually call them both blue. You know, they are different. We know they're kind of on that spectrum of it, but you know, light blue against dark blue is actually they're considered totally different colours. Bizarre.
Well,
anyway, back to Southampton.
Well, for the fourth game in a row, we played a game in the home kit. We haven't worn the away kit yet this season.
No, and number five coming up today.
Yeah, there we go. That, which has got to be a first, actually. But,
should be, yeah.
But you know, that's another story for another day. So basically, we had a few debuts on in this game. One for Button, Will Cullar, Ben Barkley, and Victor Gyökeres also came into it for their first.
Gyökeres not played in the League Cup the previous year.
No,
okay,
no.
Well, he was on the bench then.
Connolly came on.
Yes,
but he didn't. He wasn't here last year.
That's true.
Of course,
He came in midway through the season.
Yes, you're quite right. He came in January, yes. He signed in September, but he finished his season in Sweden and then joined us in.
But, I mean, we were looking at the team prior to the game and you didn't even know half of them were.
I wasn't sure. I knew all of them except Barkley. I hadn't heard of Barkley. And Barkley, even then, was probably been further down the pecking order because Ben White was injured.
But I mean, they came into the team. What did you make of the youngsters there?
It's a difficult one to judge, isn't it? Because I think Houghton clearly used it as a little bit of experimentation, try and Gross a little bit further back. He tried, I'm not sure where Kyle was supposed to be playing, actually, in a number 10 role, possibly. But it was clearly just a game to try a few things out. I have to be honest, I don't think anyone really shone apart from Bissouma.
Right. Mm. Okay, but the question is, do you think that Gross and Bissouma can actually function together in the same team?
It depends how you play them. I've been, like a lot of people, thinking about this week. You could put Gross back into the middle and play Bissouma in the number 10 role, but that means dropping either Proper or Stevens, who arguably don't deserve to be dropped. Or you put Bissouma in the 10 role and drop Gross, but then you are dropping our player of the season and the person who's made the most assists over the last season. So I'm really not sure how you get them both in.
It is an enigma, a quandary.
The thing is, if you're talking about the way that Houghton's been playing the team for the past two or three seasons, and then I think, yes, you would struggle to see how it's going to be. But the thing is, like, for instance, on Tuesday, we played what seemed to be a bit of a 4-1-4-1 formation. It wasn't your 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1. And like I say, I think even Houghton kind of admitted it. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but Gross's talents were wasted in the role he was. Mm. I mean, he's not there to be. If anything, it should have been Bissouma and Gross swapping roles from what they were doing, because Bissouma seems to be, whilst he's a twinkle toes, he's a little bit more defensive minded. Gross is more attacking minded, but then so is Proper, so that's another matter entirely. Mm. So you've got, if you're going to do this and then you throw into the mix the whole notion of Lacadia, well, he's a replacement for Murray. Well, clearly he's not.
No, he's not.
A different sort of player. So you can't actually think in terms of that player's going to fit in there, and there. Without actually, if you're going to consider it properly, you have to consider that there's going to be a change in formation. And I think it's not necessarily a bad thing that for the Southampton game, it was a good time to blood it, on account of the fact that we can't play 4-4-1-1 and be so rigid in future. We're going to have to be that bit much more flexible and a bit more mobile to accommodate the players that
we've
brought
in. Plan A, B and C.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, for instance, when we played against Liverpool, you could see it's not just a case of playing the 4-4-1-1, but, you know, playing a slightly more fluid role when we were going forward.
There was a lot more pressing in that Liverpool game, wasn't there?
There was, yeah. I mean,
against Man United as well.
Do you not think we are now in a position where you have to find a place for Bissouma? I don't know how you can leave him out.
No.
Well, I didn't have a problem with Gross being dropped. Therein lies the point. I think that the fellow's actually off form. You can't judge him from the Southampton game because he was far too deep, and it's a role that, frankly, I mean, you might as well stick him in goal.
Well, this was the problem I've been having since we've been looking at our transfer window and the players that we've brought in this season, and you're looking at that, and you're throwing it around and you're trying to come up with your best formation and your best team. Every time I do it, I can't find a place for Gross.
Or you have to drop someone.
That should tell you a lot then, shouldn't it?
I mean, Al won't like this, but one possibility is Proper and Gross in the middle, Bissouma in the 10 role, Murray up front, drop Stevens. Sorry, Al. He's not talking to me now.
That's sacrilege.
Having said that, every time Stevens doesn't play, we miss it. We always miss him. You're right.
He is one of those players that whose absence makes him look better.
I cannot understand why people don't rate him higher. I just can't get my head around it. I mean, it's not about the fact of you miss him when he's not there. Why can't you appreciate him when he is there?
Because he does the stuff that you don't see.
That's right.
I do.
Well, yes, you do, but other people do. But people, you know, he's not eye catching. He doesn't do anything too spectacular.
Well, no, he's more kind of ankle catching, isn't he?
Yeah. Or pushing, as he was against Liverpool.
No, so I mean, it's an interesting thing, and I think it was actually very much a worthwhile spirit. And actually, it was quite good that we played a Premier League side, because it's an indication of how far the under-23s have come, or the best elements of the under-23s have come, in order to play against a fairly strong Southampton side. And I don't think any of them were particularly horribly wanting and looked out of depth. You can see they're not ready to, I don't think, to be bloodied into a Premier League game. But you can see how far they've come.
I would possibly disagree with that to a certain degree, but because I saw enough from Gokoris to say that he would be ready to come into a Premier, but I wouldn't start him. But no. if you needed someone to come in on the bench, because in the first half he was direct, he was dynamic, he was running at goal, and he was not scared, and he took his opportunity pretty well.
The main problem for Gyökeres is that in the role that he plays, there's plenty of traffic ahead of him. So what he's doing, again, a wide forward who comes in off the wings, and we've got Izquierdo when he's fit, we've got Jack and Bach, who's going to be ahead of him in the queue, we've got March, who, I mean, admittedly March and Knockout are more out and out wingers, so if it's decided that we're going to play more of a 4-3-3 type style, then that's when the likes of Gyökeres could actually then step up. But until such time as that happens, he's got too much ahead of him to get into the team. I think I
also feel the same about Lucardia. Actually, I'm not sure how you get him in the squad, because
You'd have to have a rearrangement.
I worked it out. There was no Murray in the team.
Okay,
but you play. It's going to three at the back. Play 3-5-2 with Andoni and Lucardi up front. And it's
why Andoni? We don't know what he's all about at all. We haven't seen him yet. So that's when you have Bissouma behind Lucardi, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, despite us saying all this, I predict the starting lineup today would be exactly the same as Man United.
I think so, yeah.
And why wouldn't it be, to be honest?
Well, against Liverpool, certainly, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so we also had, we mentioned them briefly, Will Collar and Ben Barkley making their first appearances, or as we like to call them, Bross on steroids. they're big lads.
Yep, they didn't really put foot wrong. I mean, it says a lot, doesn't it, when Southampton did push in the last 15 minutes, they had Bertrand and Charlie Austin on, you know, so no shame in sort of letting in a goal there in the last minute. But I think they held themselves pretty well. The only thing I would say is no one really leapt out apart from Bissouma for me. I'd like to see
Jahan Bash.
He didn't really get much of the ball. The ball kept on coming out to the other wing. I don't know how many touches he had in the game, but you can't judge this early. No. But he didn't really see much of the ball, to be honest.
No, I think one thing he doesn't do is challenge in the air. I mean, he was winning headers, but that's when it was unchallenged. I would say winning headers. He's happy to head the ball, but only when unchallenged, you know. And they had a big... I mean, one of the issues that where you can't learn a great deal is the amount of aerial stuff that Houghton was playing, or the Houghton's team was playing. And when you're up against the Mark Hughes side, you know that's not a tactic that's going to work particularly well, because they're the ones that are more versed in it than we are. And let's say you bring on Aaron Connolly, you know, for the last 5 minutes, and, you know...
He's not going to be winning headers.
No, I mean, I think it was an excellent... opportunity. I take your point that no one stood out, but then I also think not only was whether you could tell whether players were decent or not, it's because there was a slightly rogue setup to it. It wasn't your 4-4-2. It wasn't like for like replacements. That said, I would say that for me, Bernardo is a better centre back than he's a fullback.
Yeah. Well, this is it. This was his third appearance for us in his third different position.
But I think that he seemed to be for that particular game, he seemed to be most at home in the centre back.
Yeah. I think it also shows you the step up in quality, because the under-23s played last night. I had a few friends that went and said that, you know, some of the players there, Victor and Connolly, looked absolutely superb at that level when we beat Man City 5-0.
So, yeah.
It, you know, when we do call for these players to be pushed up, it's a huge leap, let's be honest.
It is.
But there needs to, there does need to be that progression. There needs to,
well, that's
there,
where there the loan thing comes in. Him.
There needs to be a pathway to the first thing for these players, because this is something that Gareth Southgate said this week. There's not enough. The talent pool that's getting the opportunity isn't getting into the teams, and he's going to have to start looking at the Championship for players.
Well, the usual pathway is for a player to go out on loan, because there's a massive, as you say, a massive leap between the under 23s and the first team. And bearing in mind our first team is now a Premier League side, if we were in a Championship, maybe there might be a better, clearer, less of a leap up to make. But now we're a Premier League side. I mean, Gokaris is the one that he seems to be the one of the under 23s who's closest to a first team club. We don't know, but it seems
Ben White would have been on the bench.
He would have probably possibly could have played. Who knows? But the point of being is that let's look at Gokaris as an example. He hasn't played. I mean, he played against Southampton. He was very good, but doing it week in week out in the Premier League, you've got to get used to playing against seasoned professionals, and there is still a much bigger if the under 23s played against a lower Championship or a top League One side, they're going to come unstuck. So you realise that the quality is still better even in League One, even in the Championship, and that is a common pathway. For whatever reason, Guy Corres hasn't gone out on loan, which leads me to believe that either A, the team that he was going to go to isn't interested, or B, he is much more wanted and he has actually made better progression to get closer to this first team. It's an exciting time for him.
Okay. Just quickly before we move on, David Button also made his debut for us. He will get a run in the team at some point when Matty Ryan goes off to the Asia Cup. So he did very well.
I would say Matt Ryan's place is not in jeopardy, and that's what I'm saying.
I think that he had safe hands. His handling was very good. His command of the area was very good. I think what worries me most is that Southampton fans got to him, and he started shaking and wobbling. And we saw that air swipe, and luckily we got away with it. But you know, when you've got the likes of Ben Roberts, who's a goalkeeping coach, and it's not as though Button is exactly sort of green. He's, you know, he was at Fulham before. I think that, you know, that sort of thing will be hopefully got out of his system. And again, like I was saying earlier, I think the Button's debut for Brighton was better than Ryan's debut for
That's
Brighton.
True.
So
That's true. Yep.
I'm not that worried.
Well, on that note, that is all we've actually got time for this week. So thank you to listening to the Albion Wall. Thank you to Matthew Wilkin for coming back in again.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you, of course, to Simon Morgan. I've been Aidy Packham. This has been the Albion Raw. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. I don't mind other guys dancing with my girl.